I'm Karen Hartglass. It's time for It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. I have to tell you, I just had an incredible lunch, and the flavors are still swimming around in my mouth, and I love that when you can continue to enjoy something even after you've finished it. So do you want to know what it was? We had last night a kind of new pesto sauce made with sunflower seeds instead of pine nuts, and it's really yummy. And we had it last night, and I got leftovers for lunch, which was great. And you can get the recipe, because I want to share it. It's so good, at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Just go there right now, and you can grab it. You can see some pictures. It's right there on the homepage. And there's a bunch of other recipes we added this week. I'll tell you about them maybe, if you're lucky, a little later. And you know this show. It's called It's All About Food. We talk about food, whether it's healthy food or not so healthy food. And you know what I'm leading up to, Camille. that's my guest who's losing it before I introduce her. Well, anyway, okay, here we go. So I have Camille DeAngelis on with me today, and she's the author of a new book called Bones and All. She's also the author of Merry Modern and Petty Magic. She's a certified vegan lifestyle coach and educator and is currently veganizing an 18th century Scottish cookbook. She lives in Boston, and you can find her on the web at cometparty.com. Okay, so hi, and how are you doing, Camille?
I'm great, Karen. How are you?
Great. Yeah, so anyway.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. So before you interrupted me with your lovely laughter, I was talking about how we talk about all kinds of food on this show, and some things I don't even consider food are animal foods. I haven't eaten meat in, like, decades. But one of the things we're going to talk about, based on your fictional book, is eating humans eating humans, cannibalism, some people call it. You just call it being an eater.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the point of the book is that flesh is not food. It's not. It's not
flesh
food. A lot of people eat it.
Food.
It is what we have been indoctrinated to believe is food. For thousands of years we've been eating it. That doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it ethical. It doesn't make it fair to the animals and to the planet.
You're reminding me of the movie Finding Nemo, which seems to be playing a lot lately on television on one of the stations. We've seen it a few times over and over because we like it. But there's my favorite line in it is, fish are your friends, not food.
Yes.
We can continue that and say any flesh of any kind is not food. Even human flesh.
Yeah. You know, so the thing that I keep, the thing that keeps running through my head is that bit in the China study where T. Colin Campbell is talking about how flesh is actually the most easily assimilated protein. So he's like, if you want the most efficient protein, you should eat human flesh, except no, don't do that. That's terrible. Why would you do that? But that really, you know, I mean, obviously I was already a vegan when I read this book, but I was like, wow, you know, I mean, you could take it to a logical extreme that is completely insane. But what is also insane is eating any other kind of animal protein, I think, anything too.
So that was going to be my first question, which you answered already, was there a message in this book that you wrote?
So I wrote this book to get people thinking about flesh eating and to get people thinking about themselves as predators, because it's not something that, you know, you're cognizant of, you're conscious of as you're, you know, just kind of mindlessly ordering, you know, your lunch from, like, Chick-fil-A. I mean, not everybody could have sunflower pesto for lunch, unfortunately. It sounds delicious. So I wanted to get people thinking about, like, this is predatory. It was really shocking to me when I first kind of put two and two together in that way. And like I said, I had already gone vegan. I've been vegetarian for many years before that. But that was a real, you know, like a shocking little epiphany for me to have as I was revising the book, because initially, you know, as a fiction writer, I don't want to be, you know, pounding somebody over the head with a message. I want to get them with a really good story. And the story has to come first. And so initially when I had this idea, writing about this, you know, 16-year-old girl who basically eats anyone, gobbles them up like an ogre in a fairy tale, you know. I got this idea, and it was hilarious to me because it's like, oh, I'm a vegan and I have this ridiculous idea about a cannibal. and so you know, it was actually I have a funny story that I was like, oh, I can't take this seriously, right? But I was actually at Dirt Candy with a couple of friends, one of whom is also a long time vegetarian, and when I told her this idea, you know, over this like delicious, you know, vegan meal. She just started giggling uncontrollably, and she was like, I think you need to write this. So I started writing it, thinking like, oh, this is just this, you know, hilarious paradox. But then as I started revising it, I was working on the different, you know, reading assignments for Victoria Brand's Main Street Vegan Academy, which is how I got my certification as a, vegan lifestyle coach and educator. So I'm reading the China Study as I'm revising the book. And I was also reading Victoria's books, and I read John Robbins' books, and I read The World Peace Diet by Will Tuttle.
Will Tuttle.
So all of these books, you know, reading these wonderful enlightening books made me realize like this, I can reach people with this book. This book is like much bigger than me just telling a story to entertain you. You know, so it sort of became, you know, this book that I was hoping to sort of have this message, you know, at the end, you know, to have people thinking like, you know, as they look at my bio and they see that I'm a vegan, they're like, oh, that's funny. You know, and then they're reading the book. Hopefully, you know, they're really into the book. And then at the end, you know, in the acknowledgments, you know, and I just lay it all out there. You know, I'm like, this book is about flesh eating. And so, you know, hopefully, you know, you just get people thinking about it, you know, and I mean, a lot of people, aren't like, you know, cause when I had my vegan epiphany, it was just boom. Like I didn't do Meatless Mondays. I didn't do any of that stuff. It was just like, this is the right way, to live my life. Mm-hmm. And so I just, you know, there were no more animal products after that. And I, you know, that was over 4 years ago, and I've been, you know, this has been like the happiest 4 years of my life and the most fulfilling 4 years of my life and the most prolific also. So I'm actually really interested in talking to people about how going vegan can make you more creative. I've actually written about that on Victoria's blog. So,
you're clearer now. You're not covered up with all kinds of crud and pus and crap. You're clear. Your brain's clear.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And it's fueled. So I wanted to say, I think more and more people are learning that meat, or at least a lot of meat, isn't healthy, and that we really should consume a diet that is plant-centered. But we've known for a long time that eating other humans is really not good for us. But I think it's funny that we're learning that eating other animals isn't good for us either. It's just going to take time. But it's very similar.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really slow sort of unlearning and relearning process for a lot of people. But actually, I went to Vegan Drinks. I know you guys have that in New York, and we have a meetup here in Boston once a month. And I met this guy who had a really interesting prediction. This is like last month's meetup. He said, you know, in about 10 years, I think we're going to reach critical mass. And we're going to have enough vegans and enough, you know, people who are vocal, you know, not in a militant way, but in a just a loving, like, this is the truth kind of way, which is what I'm aiming for. You know, I don't, you know, want to be, I mean, only beating people over the head with my truth, you know, because that's not actually going to do anybody any good. Like, I went to, a couple of barbecues yesterday and, you know, All of the people I was with were, I mean, I was the only vegan there, and I was just like, you know, quietly eating my veggie burger and my roasted, you know, portobello mushroom and salad and, you know, roasted asparagus and potatoes, and it was delicious. I'm just like, I am just quietly being who I am, and people can follow this example when they're ready, you know.
Now, nobody was asking you about what you were eating?
You know, I was really surprised. I had never actually met any of these people before. This was like totally new, and so I was a little bit nervous about it. But everybody was just totally accepting of it. It was really fine. And I actually encountered more, sort of people hassling me about it back when I was just a vegetarian. People took it as an affront that, and it wasn't even necessarily food that they had prepared. So it wasn't like, your great aunt, Gertrude or whatever saying like, you don't want to eat the food that I'm trying to nourish you with. Like, it wasn't even that. It's just like you could be out somewhere because there's this people have this, they see it as an implicit judgment. I just want to sit and have my meal and we can have a conversation about anything you want to talk about, but it's been actually totally fine. All you can do is just, you're just quietly, eating what you want to eat, what you feel is right to eat, what is, fair and ethical and, honest and compassionate. You just let people take, people take the time that they need to kind of get on board with it, I ran off on a tangent here, but, so this guy that I'm with saying that, in 10 years, he thinks that we're going to reach critical mass, and so it's going to become a fully mainstream lifestyle choice. And when it totally hits the mainstream, it's already happening, It's like it's never been easier to be vegan. And I think, like, how, blasé everybody, all these meat eaters were at this, these two barbecues that I went to yesterday really just goes to show you how far we've come in the last 10 years. It's becoming more mainstream, but it will get to the point where everyone will see it as a mainstream lifestyle choice.
Well, I really hope that happens. I can't wait. Ten years is not soon enough, and I hope it happens.
I know.
So let's talk more about your book, Bones and All. I have a few questions and comments. So one of the things is the main character, Marin, who's 16 years old, like you said. In any good story, you want to like the character, the lead character, and go along, and she's definitely very likable, and it's funny because, there is the ick factor of her being an eater and eating humans, but, you're reading about her, and you understand her issues and her insecurities and her fears and her relationships, and you want her to succeed, even though she's eating eating humans.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you felt that way because I really wanted her to be, identifiable. I mean, and a lot of it is sort of, the ordinary teen angst just sort of, amplified times.
Yeah.
I don't know, 20, 200. She's a very isolated teen, obviously because of the thing that she does. And so her mother is, every time she does the bad thing, as she calls it, her mother just kind of whisks her away to another town in another state and they kind of start all over again. This is all in the first couple pages, so I'm not giving anything away, for your listeners, but, she eventually has to go out on her own, and that's when she really doesn't want to do the bad thing, but she's on her own, completely alone in the world, and she's just trying to make peace with who she is, or she's trying to not be who she is, and then. Yeah, it's kind of everything that we're all trying to do. I was thinking the other day about personality integration and sort of, this fits into veganism perfectly. I mean, you want to think of yourself as a caring, compassionate person, but you have to, look at every single aspect of your life and are you behaving compassionately, in all of those sectors, not just how you treat other humans.
Okay, I have a question about another character in the book, and his name is Sully, and I'm not going to say any more about him other than he's an older man. But I was wondering what was behind your choice of what was behind him in that he was also an eater and he didn't decide to consume Marin right away. He was kind of following her around. What was behind that?
Well, I'm trying to think of a way to talk about him that isn't spoilery.
Okay, well, then you can tell me offline sometime. I was just kind of curious about that.
Yeah, but he's definitely playing a cat and mouse game with her. She doesn't realize it at first. It's hard to know.
Oh, a cat and mouse game. Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. So I was heading towards the end, and I was kind of hoping that there would be this redemption somehow, like I mentioned Finding Nemo before and how the sharks in Finding Nemo decide they want to be vegetarian and they're struggling. Or like in the Twilight movie, the good vampires aren't sucking blood from people. They're getting it from animals, unfortunately.
I haven't seen it. I haven't read the books.
Oh, okay. Well, I've seen the movies and they're horrible. But I don't recommend
them. That's why I didn't, because I heard they weren't any good. So that's why I haven't read any of the books or seen.
But I'm wondering, maybe there's going to be a series, and maybe later on, Marin will try to abstain from flesh eating.
I have not done a series so far. I'm kind of when I wrap up the world that I've created and I give the characters their fates, I'm on to the next thing, you know? And I hope that I've made my point with this book and, the next thing I do, actually, speaking of the 18th century Scottish cookbook, the little project, my little side project, I have, a sort of companion project. It's the main one. And that my next magnum opus, is set in 18th century Edinburgh. And it, part of the story follows a family of Pythagoreans, who have an animal rescue thing going on in their house. Like they'll take in injured foxes and things. And they don't eat animals, which is, actually less of a, freakish thing than you would have thought back then. I mean, there were a lot of people who, preachers who were speaking out against flesh eating back then, and it was, it was less feasible to be, to abstain from all animal products. But there was definitely a consciousness of it that you might not have expected. I mean, the word vegetarian wasn't coined, until, the mid 19th century, but there were vegetarians back before that word existed.
There were Pythagoreans a long time ago.
Yes. And so I want to write about them. The story is going to be so fun. I can't wait to write it. But I'm still going to be exploring, vegetarianism and veganism in my future fiction for sure. In a more overt way, which is going to be really fun.
And do you have some Scottish background in you?
I don't actually. I have some Irish ancestry, but no Scottish. I did actually go, I was really fortunate to be granted a residency at this place called Hoppenden Castle outside of Edinburgh, and it's a writer's retreat, a writer's colony. So I went there a couple years ago for a month-long residency and actually revised Bones and All while I was there. But I was collecting a lot of, fun historical tidbits from the different books that I found in the National Library of Scotland, and love walking around the old city and the old town, and soaking up the atmosphere, because you can still feel it. There are a lot of places where the city has become so modern that you can't picture what it would have been like 200 or 300 years ago, but you can picture it very easily in Edinburgh.
So you can picture it in a lot of European towns. That's what Europe. They build these incredible buildings that have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's incredible. I love it.
I did love Edinburgh.
There was a vegetarian restaurant or a vegan restaurant I went to in Edinburgh about 10 years ago, and I got vegan, what's the famous Scottish dish?
Haggis?
Yes.
I've had vegan haggis. It's really good. I think it's made with lentils and walnuts.
I don't remember. It was a long time ago, but it was good.
Really good.
And I don't know what the original version tastes like because I've been vegetarian a very long time. I have another Marin question, the character in your book. Is she based on anyone? Is there any of you in any of the characters?
I mean, there's a little piece of me in every character, I think. And that might be a diplomatic answer, but you have to create this person from somewhere, and you have to give them motivations that feel, compelling, I guess I would say if she's based on anybody, she's based on me in the sense that, I was a little bit of a loner in high school. I definitely remember feeling isolated and lonely, and I felt like people I didn't feel understood, And so that was what I grew on, when I was, fleshing out her character, as it were. So I guess I would say that, you know, she's based on me, but only in that sense.
Right. So you're in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's some great places for vegan food. Do you have some favorites?
I do. There's actually a really great place, like a 10-minute walk from me. I live in Somerville, and so there's a place in Teal Square called True Bistro, which does the most delicious brunch. It's really, really good. We have a couple of really good vegetarian places. You know, I wish they were vegan, but I understand why one of them isn't. So it's called Veggie Galaxy, the square in Cambridge. They sort of specialize in getting meat eaters in the door because it's like, it's very like 1950s dinery kind of thing. And then you look at the menu, it's full of comfort food. It's like, you know, heaven for vegans too, because everything is, you can get everything vegan. They have like, you know, omelets and stuff like that. Which like I said, you know, not thrilled about, but like they have a lot of people who like ordinarily would never, ever, ever go to a vegetarian restaurant will go there, and then it starts to feel accessible, and so then they're more open to it. So I understand why they do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that place. We have Life Alive in Central Square in Cambridge as well, and there's the Walnut Grill in Newton Highlands. That's really good. There's a place called Mai Tai downtown in Chinatown. There's Coco Bee, which is more of a takeout place. I want there to be even more places, you know. That's why I love coming down to New York, because it's just like, yeah! Like last time I was there, after Victoria's book launch last week, I went to Blossom, and yeah.
Oh, that's where we went. Oh, I missed you.
Oh my gosh, I don't know how I missed. That's so
yeah.
funny. I don't know how I we stayed at the bookstore a long time. Chit-chatting with, you know, all my friends that I don't get to see very often, so. But we've got some really good places here. I just wish there were more of them.
Okay, so you mentioned omelets at that one restaurant, and that just like mm-hmm. triggered a little something. So I just posted a bunch of recipes on my website, responsibilityandliving.com, and one of the recipes mm-hmm. is this French herbed no egg omelet. And I don't know if you've ever played with soca or garbanzo bean flour, but they make incredible
mm-hmm.
omelets, and I'm just like nuts for them lately. So I go through these phases, and I'm in my no egg omelet phase, and just had one that was just so good. So one day in 10 years or so, like you said, we'll be there.
I hope that guy is right.
Yeah. Now, can you tell me what Comet Party means? Your website is cometparty.com.
Yeah. So I had been, I'm trying to remember at what point I first heard about the concept of a comet party. You know, when Halley's Comet, what was that, 1911, I think, I was looking through some old newspapers, or maybe the history book, and I found these newspaper write-ups about the comet parties that were happening for the comet sighting. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like that sounds like the coolest, that is the coolest reason to have a party, you know? So then I started thinking about it in terms of a metaphor of, you know, that being your best and brightest self, celebrating life, the positivity of that, you know, getting together to celebrate something that is so much bigger than you, celebrating this comet. It sort of became entwined with, my veganism, because I believe that this is so much bigger than me. What I eat affects a lot of other people besides me. And it affects
a lot of other non-people.
Non-human people. It's funny because like when I say people now, I'm also thinking non-human people, because I love the concept of a non-human person. And I was explaining this to somebody who studies animals recently, and she was actually more open to it than I thought she would be. I'm feeling really hopeful about that. But yeah, so that's
well, come on. Legally a corporation can be considered a person. Can't a non-human animal? I mean, really.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
I want to mention one last thing before we go. Are you familiar with the musical Sweeney Todd?
Yes, but I haven't seen it.
Okay, well, I've performed in it a number of times. I think it's my favorite piece. I've played Joanna, the 16-year-old little unfortunate ward of this evil judge. And when her father comes back to London to get vengeance and find his wife who's gone nuts, it's a complicated story. He hooks up in his old barber shop with this woman underneath who has a pie shop, and he wants to get the judge in his shop so he can cut his throat and kill him. So he's practicing, and he's practicing on other people, lonely people, and then they have to decide what to do with the bodies. So they end up, since it's London in the industrial age and people are poor and meat is hard to find, they end up cutting the bodies and putting them into meat pies. And the pie maker's business is flourishing. Nobody knows, of course. but when the pie maker first suggests to the barber that this is what they can do, they sing a duet, and it's called Have a Little Priest. And she talks about the different kinds of people and how they might taste. It's quite comic. It's really fun. And I want to play that at the end of this segment, so I just wanted you to know what it's going to be about. And it's just the segment we're going to play is just the last bit of the song. You're not going to hear most of it, but it's a recording that I have, me and my partner Gary. We're called the Swinging Gourmets, and I wanted to end with that. So, Camille, I want to thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. And thank you for this enjoyable read, bones and all. I look forward to seeing you at more big veg events here and there.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ryan. I had a great time.
Great, thank you. So I'm going to say goodbye, and then we'll hear the end of Have a Little Priest.
Have charity towards the world, my pet.
Yes, yes, I know, my love.
We'll take the customers that we can get.
High born and low, my love.
We'll not discriminate great from small. No, we'll serve anyone, needy anyone, and to anyone at all.